And, I guess it's been nearly 20 years since he stumbled onto something called the Hutchison effect. And you can actually see videos of this effect taking place on his website. Actual heavy objects levitating. And, as I mentioned earlier, when the, when this thing is switched on, there are, people, you know, several square blocks away that report certain effects, things levitating, you know, imagine your priceless china all of a sudden rising up off of your table, and then God forfend, he should switch it off because it'll all come crashing down. It's anti-gravity he stumbled onto, and, at one point his laboratory was situated in more of a warehouse or a garage, it was broken into, and, a lot of the material and paperwork and equipment was stolen. Possibly the government was responsible for that. But again, he's situated now in an apartment, and he's not going to allow anybody to stop him with his research. And we're welcoming once again to the Richard Serrett Show and News Talk 1010, John Hutchison. Hello, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. It's been a while. Listen, I was just on your website, and I see that you're getting into the electric car business.
Well, that's my webmaster. He's got his own ideas on that.
Oh.
He's a student. He's a student. He's having fun.
Oh, but are you dabbling in that area, electric cars?
A little bit. I act as a consultant to a lot of different projects and that kind of thing. So
because it's interesting because I had the CEO of a company out here in Toronto called Zen Motors, and they're producing electric cars, but they're not legal to drive in Ontario. They won't allow them here. So they sell them down in the United States. I can't imagine, you know, why. But I understand that recently in British Columbia, they are now allowing zero emission vehicles on the roads. So.
Oh, interesting. Yes.
Now, I'm guessing though that some your expertise would come in handy when they're looking at developing a battery that would allow, you know, us to drive one of these electric cars for more than 8 hours without having to recharge, because that's a main stumbling block right now. Do you do any work on super advanced batteries?
Yes, actually I do. I've been working on what they call zero-point energy or Casimir effect type batteries for a while. There's already been one that was accepted by the U.S. Patent Office in 1996. And these things have great potential if they are brought out into the world. And unfortunately, with me, I've got so many projects going that... I've had sponsorship from Japan and presented to Japan these kind of batteries and that kind of technology, as well as Germany. But the U.S. and Canada haven't caught up yet on that.
Always the way with a prophet, never respected in his own land.
Yeah, I know. I know. I feel like I'm not wanted here. More so in the U.S., of course, but not wanted here that much.
Now, such a battery, a zero-point battery, how far along are you in its development, and what give us a sense of what it would be able to do?
Well, actually, a couple of years ago, through the Planetary Association for Clean Energy, Dr. Makowski was going to get us $5 million to go right into factory production on these things. Unfortunately, his funding never came through, and the third just went by the wayside.
But do you have a prototype?
Oh, I've had many prototypes.
Mm-hmm.
And I presented them in Japan in 1994, 95. And there's one of them in Japan sitting in a museum kind of setting with one of my sponsors there, and it's still in operation. There's one in India where my ex there is using it and testing it and having fun with it. Also, I guess it must have sold over maybe well over 300, I think, to date.
And well, who bought them and how are they using them?
Oh, they just use them for field detectors or for just a novelty item to see. Like, they're single cells and they put out very low energy, but still they're kind of an interest to a lot of different people.
Enough to run maybe a transistor radio or something like that?
Yeah, a good one will. I mean, these things are, how can you say it? Some of the cells are bad, some of them are good, some of them are actually extra good, and just need the proper facilities to put out a formulation and then put it right into factory production.
Now, John, I mentioned off the top, I think it's been about, has it been about 20 years since you stumbled onto the Hutchison effect?
Oh, good heavens, that long ago. I've been always fiddling around with these kind of things, and it would be 1980. Roughly.
Yeah. Oh, 1980, so we're looking at nearly 30 years.
A long time ago.
Mm.
I was promoted to the U.S. government and as well to the Canadian government through people that found me doing this kind of stuff. And I wasn't promoting it, I wasn't doing anything with it, just having fun with it. And they promoted it to the U.S. government, U.S. Army Intelligence, Colonel John Alexander and his team. And to the Canadian government, Dr. Lauren A. Kuhn and his team at DSTI, D&D Canada. That would be 1986. And then some of the national laboratories came and checked it out and did experiments and classified it or not classified it. You know, and invited CTV News to cover it, and they covered it.
Now, I understand there for a while it could be sort of hit or miss in terms of reproducing the effect. When was the last time you sort of switched the thing on, and is there any new video on the website, sort of video evidence?
Oh, I got hours and hours of video. In the last several years when I replicated it here, there's been like National Geographic TV and Film have come here, Fox News, plus many other news people and Discovery Channel, and which presents, my producer will be presenting Beyond Invention out there again, which is about 20-minute long experiments and interviews with different scientists that worked with me on this, and it should air on, I guess, Discovery or Fox. I'm not too sure which channel, because he's going mainstream with this. So, otherwise, to answer your question, I have maybe about 25 hours of new video footage starting from about 2000. On up to present time.
Okay, so that's is that on HutchisonEffect.ca? Is that the right website? Or Infinite Energy?
No, I don't know. There's so many websites out there. There's a real good one, American Anti-Gravity.
That's right, American Anti-Gravity. My apologies.
Yeah, they haven't updated for about a year now, and I did present them with maybe about 13 hours of videotape. So I've been trying to get that stuff uploaded to MySpaces, but it's so slow through dial-up that... It's kind of difficult.
You're like the you're the brains behind the operation. You have the least fast computer. That's like the guy that owns the stereo equipment store, but he has the lousy stereo.
Yeah, I know. This thing is, yeah, wow. I mean, it is slow, really slow.
Hook that up to I don't know your 0 point battery or something. Anyway, John Hutchison. John Hutchison is here, always fascinating, and we'll talk about a number of things, including the Philadelphia Experiment revisited, recreating the Ark of the Covenant, anti-gravity, of course, perhaps time permitting, his work on revealing the secrets of the Bermuda Triangle. Back with more with John Hutchison. Nikola Tesla reincarnated, perhaps? You tell me. The Richard Serrett Show here on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
On News Talk 1010 CFRB. To talk to Richard, call 416-872-1010. Toll free 1-800-561-CFRB or Star Talk on your cellular.
Welcome back. John Hutchison, my guest, stumbled on to, he discovered anti-gravity, or a method of creating an anti-gravity type field, and has duplicated that experiment a number of times on video and elsewhere, levitated very heavy objects over a widespread area. Now, John, there was a recent event where neighbors were complaining about some of your anti-gravity experiments. Tell me about that.
Oh, that's kind of intriguing. A friend came up from Long Beach, California.
Is that Tom Skies?
Yeah, that's Tom Skies. And he dropped in, and he, with his uncle, and they were videotaping a lot of levitation activity in here. And little announced to me that the effects were radiating out into New Westminster. When he returned to Long Beach, I found that he started to feel all kind of very strange and was in great distress, as well as when I was communicating with him, there was a doctor here about two blocks away who reported at the same time when this happened that everybody in New West felt something and felt kind of ill.
How far is New West from Vancouver?
I think it's about 12 miles.
Hmm.
It's a almost a suburb.
What were people feeling? What was Tom and others, what were they feeling?
They felt like they were being ripped apart and dizzy and kind of nauseous.
Wow.
And I didn't feel anything, but this is what's reported in the area. So I'm thinking, okay, it couldn't be RF, it couldn't be electrostatics or anything else except maybe a gravity wave. Because there's not enough RF in the system to cause any harm at all. I mean, I don't use that much RF.
And how is Tom now?
He's improving. He's getting better. He's got some support from, Steven Seagal, the actor fellow I know, and some other friends down there in Hollywood land. But he's, he put a blogger up, actually talking about his experiences with me.
So, I mean, is he mad at you, or is
no,
he...
No, not at all. Not mad at me. He just didn't know what was happening to him.
It almost sounds like some of the effects that some of the crew members of the USS Eldridge were feeling.
Uh-oh. You're kidding. That's a delicate topic there, isn't it?
The Philadelphia experiment.
Yes, that's something that Ronnie Melaloni and myself want to do for Fox TV. That's one of our episodes, probably the grand finale of our 12 episodes. We're going to be attempting to do that.
What, make a battleship disappear?
Make a battleship disappear, either a model or a full-scale battleship.
Oh, my. Okay, listen, we'll take a time out. We'll come back. We have to talk about that further. John Hutchison, I told you, this guy is... He's channeling Nikola Tesla. He certainly knows all there is to know about him and his work. Back with more of the Richard Serrett Show here on News Talk 1010 CFRB. Welcome back. John Hutchison, he of the Hutchison Effect. And check out incredible video at AmericanAntiGravity.com or HutchisonEffect.ca. You can actually see the Hutchison Effect at work, where heavy objects levitated. What's the heaviest object ever levitated, John?
The heaviest object recorded has been roughly about 1,500 pounds.
So, like an automobile, or what was it?
Actually, it was a large transformer that we levitated about a couple inches up off the floor.
Mm.
It came down and sort of shook the floor, of course. I mean... the concrete floor, but that's the heaviest, I think.
Now, let's get back to the, you had this visit from a gentleman in California, Tom Sky, and I guess somehow some of the, something leaked out and he was affected, and also people about 12 miles away in New Westminster, and I was sort of joking that it sounded very similar to some of the effects of those who were aboard the USS Eldridge. During the Philadelphia experiment, and then you mentioned that you're hoping to reproduce that experiment. Now, what would be, we don't know exactly what was aboard the USS Eldridge, do we? Or you must have a pretty good idea?
Well, being a real Navy buff, I do have a great idea of what was available at the time, and I have a lot of equipment from that time period off of warships.
But for those who don't know what happened to the USS Eldridge, they were testing a cloaking device, but they only wanted it to be, you know, sort of cloaking it to radar. They didn't expect it necessarily to actually disappear, correct?
That's correct. Excuse me, that's correct. Also to repel mines and act as camouflage. So when they start up these generators that powered up Tesla coils and RF generation equipment along, also with powerful magnetic fields, apparently, I'm saying apparently because this thing disappeared, there's a lot of bits and pieces that Ronnie was able, my partner in crime here, Ron Melaloni was able to find on it, as well as myself. And I started to replicate it in 2006 a little bit with a model ship, a foot long, right here, and got some rather strange results, which should be on that website, too. There was lightning bolts coming off the ship. It seemed to phase in and out of existence a little bit like that, and the water was levitating up. So I was lucky to try that again just recently and capture that with high-speed digital camera I had and got some interesting photographs I put on the blog spot.
Well, that I definitely have to check out. Now, for those who are not familiar with the story of the Philadelphia experiment, the USS Eldridge, what are we talking about here, 1947?
Roughly 1947, yes.
Yeah. Which is curious because it's right in the ballpark, of course, with Roswell, the Roswell crash. I don't know. Do you think there's any connection there? Was it possible that they were utilizing something they retrieved from that UFO crash site?
Highly unlikely, I think, because all that stuff was taken to Area 51.
Okay.
And they didn't have time, really, to incorporate that, I don't think. I mean, I have some inside sources, black ops folks, that whisper things to me once in a while, but my ex did an excellent film on that, Miracle of the Unknown. It premiered on Entertainment Tonight.
Okay.
And she really goes into detail on that whole...
But the Philadelphia, the USS Eldridge disappeared, it was in Port where? Do you know the details?
Oh, good heavens. In the Philadelphia shipyards, was it?
Okay, and then it disappeared, and then it reappeared off the coast of West Virginia or something? Or Virginia, rather?
Yeah, that's what I hear. It disappeared, reappeared, came back. Now, that's similar to some of the effects I have, is things disappear and reappear somewhere else.
But then, when it reappeared, unfortunately for some of the crew members, they materialized half sort of protruding out of the actual salt. They reappeared sort of encased in solid metal and met a rather horrific end.
That's right. Very, very horrific. And there's a lot of mystery, of course, and a lot of cover-up over that. But in relation to those kind of effects, I can only say that the metal samples I have seem to resemble that kind of thing, that kind of event or effect.
Where the metal is can become sort of pliable and rubbery, or?
Rubbery, pliable, and wood gets inside of it, and other objects get inside of the metal itself. So when they do analysis on it, then they can detect the chunks of wood or sawdust or rather strange things inside the wood, or inside the metal.
And Tesla was heavily involved in that project, was he not?
No, I think that by that time, he's pretty old. He passed away in 43, I believe.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of other people that gleaned information from him and incorporated that into the experiments at the time. Because there's a lot of heavy experiments in radar and that at that time with warships.
Now, if they were able to do that sort of thing back 60 years ago, albeit it was probably unexpected, it was sort of by accident. They didn't necessarily anticipate that result, as they were just trying to use it as a cloaking device. They didn't expect it to necessarily vanish, but that's 60 years ago. Imagine what they have now. I say they, the military or the government. It's almost scary to think. In fact, I spoke with an aerospace industry employee who was telling me about Ben Rich, who was the chief engineer at Skunk Works at Lockheed back, I guess, up until about 1985. And the quote he gave from Ben Rich shortly before he died, Ben Rich says, "We have, sitting out there in the desert, things you would not believe." He said, "If you've seen Star Wars or Star Trek," he said, we've been there, done that, or decided it wasn't worth the effort."
I believe that.
Yeah.
I have a friend at Skunk Works, an executive there that retired, and he was a fan of mine, actually. And he appeared in Nick Cook's book, Hunt for Zero Point, that Nick Cook of Jane's Defense Weekly wrote up, and also put a television show together on TLC about Hunt for Zero Point. And he ran into Boyd Bushman of
yes.
Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, he was, followed immediately after Ben Rich.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's about 2000, I think it was.
Yeah.
And all that came out, and then Boyd appeared with a friend of mine, David Sarita, in the film From Here to Andromeda.
Any doubt in your mind, then, that they've already developed zero-point technology, anti-gravity technology, in fact, you know, developed aircraft that are running on zero-point?
No, I'm sure of it. I mean, zero point's been around for a long time. It's taken in consideration when they're manufacturing certain materials as a problematic kind of situation with zero point. So it's been around a long, long time, and they had a lot of time to develop it. And I've heard unusual stories about stuff levitating and flying around with barium titanate material that they used.
Do you think that might explain the mass UFO sighting at in Stevensville, and also going back 10 years to the Phoenix Lights, that triangular object a mile wide?
Oh, I believe that. Yes, I saw one of those down there when I was in Phoenix, Arizona, or at Scottsdale, actually.
Oh, you saw one of these triangular craft?
Oh, yeah, of course. I was out sitting on the balcony with my lady there and looking up, and I saw this triangular thing go silent, very quietly across the sky. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, I should have had the camera you know, that's I'd sit out there with a camera normally, and this time I didn't. So this thing went from across the sky, and I'm looking at it, and it's quiet, triangular-shaped thing, and just vanished.
My word.
I wish I had the camera. I mean, gee.
I'll say.
Well, the whole idea is getting the evidence, so.
How wide would you say it was?
I couldn't tell you, honestly. I mean, it seemed to be way up there in the sky, but it was definitely triangular-shaped, and I remember it was in Los Angeles in that time period in 97 when the film people were running out to the desert actually filming this stuff. But my experience down there was quite unusual. I did see a number of strange objects going across the sky, and my lady got a lot of that on camera, too.
Well, I know in the aftermath of the Phoenix Lights back in 97, of course, the military tried to explain it away and said it was flares.
Oh, no.
And so
No. I mean, so the CIA, I got a whole pile of stuff from the CIA through the Freedom of Information Act, and luckily I have some documents that say they have parts from a blown-up UFO. And it's not all blacked out or anything. They do the analysis. They try and figure out what the material is. They give all the diagrams and widths and lengths on it. So it's one of those documents that they overlooked and came into my hands.
All right. Well, speaking of Skunk Works and rediscovering lost technologies, John, maybe when we come back we can talk a little bit about your reconstructing the Ark of the Covenant.
Okay, for sure.
All right. John Hutchison, The Hutchison Effect, back with more of the Richard Serrett Show here on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
You're listening to The Richard Serrett Show.
No, I just don't know who to trust anymore, you know?
On News Talk 1010 CFRB. To talk to Richard, call 416-872-1010. Toll free 1-800-561-CFRB. Or star talk on your cellular.
Questions and or comments for inventor, self-taught physicist John Hutchison, discoverer of the Hutchison Effect. We're talking anti-gravity, zero-point energy. 416-872-1010. John, the Ark of the Covenant, you, I understand, along with, I believe, Ronnie was involved, your partner, reconstructed the Ark of the Covenant. This happened several years ago. I believe you did this for Discovery as well, did you not?
Yes, I did, actually. It was before I met Ronnie, though.
Oh, okay.
I was approached by Blue Book Films to work with them on replicating the Ark of the Covenant. So I got my team together here in New Westminster, and we were about 6 months in production and made a fantastic piece of workmanship and tested it, and boom! The sparks came out of that thing and were horrendous.
Now, you were just using the blueprint laid out in the good book, the Bible, correct? I mean, you didn't add anything, you didn't add Tesla coils, you just built it exactly as was prescribed in the Bible, correct?
Correct, except for the gold. That was a way bit too much for
us. Yes.
But we did try to use other metals and found that it did accumulate a massive charge which came out through the cherubim within, well, we tested in a warehouse, a safety area. When this happened, there was also what appeared to be entities coming out of this thing, which luckily was captured by our cameraman, Rudy Fishman. And he had about 52 hours of tape. So this thing did exactly what the Bible kind of describes in a way, and it produced an amazing amount of energy and power.
Now, did you expect this? I mean, is there any? I mean, when you built it, did you say, "Oh, okay, we've basically built a giant capacitor, or we've built a giant battery," or I mean, is there any rational explanation for why, once built, it could do the things that it did?
Well, in a way, I would say that it was much built like a accumulator, as the old term was used, or a Leyden jar, which is tinfoil on the inside and outside of a glass container. But this thing collected enough of that kind of ionic charge and pressed it out through the cherubim in an incredible arc display of electrical sparks. And then actually the cherubim melted down.
Oh, my.
Caught on fire, the paint and everything caught on fire, and it burned right into the wood. This thing was massively heavy, made out of acacia wood.
Just as the Bible prescribed.
Oh, it was highly dangerous. And Rudy was, he got all excited filming this stuff and the sparks and flames and smoke. And I'm stepping back a little bit, you know, oh, what's happening here? This is not this doesn't look good. And the proprietor, Nigel, he is getting a little nervous. Say, this is my warehouse. Okay. Said, well, shouldn't we put it this out with a, some kind of extinguisher or something like that? And then eventually he told Corinne there to grab the fire extinguisher, and she didn't know how to use it. And then eventually pulled a pin on it and then sprayed it out and got the...
So did you rebuild it after that?
Actually, no. It was supposed to have gone to Discovery Channel's new headquarters, but it never made it there. The fellow that built it with the acacia wood, he was the craftsman that built that part of it, went to him for some reason, and then he just got upset over it and trashed it.
Are you going to build another one?
Yes, we are. Absolutely.
All right, let's talk about, a bit about that when we come back. John Hutchison, my guest here on The Richard Serrett Show, back with more on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
The Richard Serrett Show continues.
Who are you scared of, Dave?
Me? Everybody. A to Z, mob, Cubans.
On News Talk 1010 CFRB.
Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll head down to Somerville, New Jersey, and check in with Nils Hamerin as we count down to Armageddon. Hopefully, Nils will have an update on that huge swath of land down in southern Colorado he mentioned a couple of weeks back, where a massive massive acres of farmland was seized by the U.S. government is through eminent domain. And according to reports, Nils is receiving, it's being turned into a giant internment and processing camp. For what? We'll find out. Hopefully he'll have an update on that, and he'll have some other information. John Hutchison stays with us until that time. He is the discoverer of the Hutchison effect. Now, the Ark of the Covenant that you rebuilt, we're going to break here again for news in a moment, John, but you said you're going to rebuild it.
Yes.
What will be the purpose this time of rebuilding it? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, actually, we're going to be rebuilding a lot of different older technologies, stuff that people have forgotten about for Fox TV. 12 episodes will be for one of our main presentations of the Ark of the Covenant, the Philadelphia Experiment, levitation, free energy, alternative energy, because Hollywood is going green, and the theme is all these technologies without conspiracies around them and kind of thing. It's will be quite enlightening to a lot of folks and kids, and that will inspire them to become inventors and discoverers themselves. That's the theme that I'm working with my producers and with Griffin Productions and that, and Fox TV.
Now, it was said the original Ark had the power to kill. The model that you built, would it have had that similar power?
It would have killed instantly, yes.
Anyone who touched the mercy seat?
Anybody that touched that would have got killed, yes.
I'm curious about these entities that were filmed as well coming off the mercy seat. Maybe when we come back after the news, we can talk a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps some other things like scalar technology, and kick around some other experiments you're working on as well.
Sounds like fun.
All right, John Hutchison will stay with us after the news. The Richard Serrett Show will be back shortly here on News Talk 1010 CFRB. We'll check in with Nils Hamerin as we count down to Armageddon. Now, John, you recreated or rebuilt the Ark of the Covenant using the specs laid out in the Bible, and you mentioned this tremendous energy pouring out of the mercy seat, and this arc of energy that had the would kill anyone instantly. And you also mentioned these entities. Describe what these entities looked like that were coming off the mercy seat.
They appeared to be like little light balls of some kind that would reappear and disappear out of existence. And this actually happened in earlier experiments where a whole area was affected by these kind of things.
Did they look like they had intelligence?
Hard to tell. Really hard to tell. Rudy was fascinated by them. He said, that's very odd stuff. I don't understand it. It was actually Corinne who was pointing out, well, gee, there's another one, and he was filming it. And luckily there was some, when they actually did the final copy of the tape, the 1 hour special, it had some of the entities in there that you could actually capture and look at.
Now, if you describe them as entities, it almost sounds like they had some intelligence. So what led you to believe that, why would you call them entities and not just, you know, lights?
Yeah, the intelligence, because we see these things when doing the experiments prior. We used to nickname some of the strange things that would appear, like Carl, that would be a red, misty kind of material that go up from the floor up to into the ceiling and disappear. I mean, this sounds pretty crazy, I know that, but we documented it so well with teams and video. But with these entities, they appear to be intelligent. What are we doing? We don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things we don't know what we're doing.
All right, let's grab a call and say hello to George. Welcome to News Talk 1010 CFRB, George.
Hi, Richard. John, you're just saying you're going to rebuild the Ark of the Covenant. Is it your intention to someday use that as a power source so that we could power our homes or to power the grid itself even?
No, not really. We're going to cover an episode, like that'd be an episode for a TV show with Griffin Productions or either Fox Television have expressed great interest in this. But we'll be covering the alternative energy aspect in many areas, such as zero-point energy power cells, which would be the best way of doing this instead of electrostatic accumulators, basically what the ARC presents itself to be in this case.
Now, it's accumulating, you say electrostatic. Is that the same sort of energy that's related to, like, solar wind?
Well, solar winds are highly charged particles coming from the sun, which are heavy cosmic rays and solar rays and that kind of thing. But, no, this is, like, electrostatics is, let's say a lightning bolt. Good example.
Mm-hmm.
Or Ben Franklin's experiments with it.
Sure.
That kind of area of interest.
All right. I've heard commentators say that the next world war will be fought not only with nuclear weapons, but also with scalar technology. What do you think of that, and what is scalar technology exactly?
Well, scalar technology was actually brought up years ago when I was working for the U.S. government. They indicated what I was doing seemed to represent what Tom Bearden was talking about, is scalar weapons, which can build a huge standing wave from a great distance from the equipment, causing a cloud to collapse and fall with rain, or cause vibration, basically falling in the range of directed energy weapons, which appeared in actually mainstream news when the Americans invaded Iraq. The Soviet people were going in there and taking out all their materials and documents and stuff on scalar weapons. This made mainstream news. So scalar weapons are kind of a directed energy pulse beams and complex waveforms that are produced and projected out there to cause havoc and chaos and things to fall apart. And I think they're being implemented in the non-lethal weapon area right now.
Do you believe that the scalar technology is available that could create hurricanes? Because I spoke with a former meteorologist from, I believe it was Oregon, who's now talking about the weaponization of weather and so forth, and he believed, at least at that several years ago when I spoke to him last, that Katrina may have been actually caused by scalar weaponry.
Highly probable. I mean, you have the amazing HAARP project up in Alaska, and they can manipulate the ionosphere by actually converting it into negative or positive, which allows ham radio operators to transmit around the world. So the HAARP project is an example of scalar tech kind of tech. And if they were to punch it hard enough and hit the Van Allen belts, well, that energy would come down to Earth and install a Earth's geomagnetic field, which was written up in R&D Innovator some years ago. So to answer that question, yes, a lot of possibilities. But who would want to try and do something that horrific, I mean, unless it was a very evil country.
Well, I mean, evil is out there, and I mean, we just have to look around us to see the evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my greatest fear, that this technology, would get into the wrong hands.
Oh, mine too.
What about HAARP's ability to cause earthquakes? I've heard that rumor as well.
Unknown for me. Mm-hmm. I haven't gone that far into researching that aspect of the earthquakes, but it's highly possible.
I know that you've also done a special with, I believe it was Fox or Discovery, and that was Taking a look at the mystery of the Bermuda Triangle and trying to come up with some scientific explanation for what was really going on. Let's talk a little bit about that now and then after the break as well. Tell me about, first of all, what that special was what did you find out?
I believe it was Motion Picture Productions, History Channel was one of them, and we're talking about black holes, miniature black holes in a Bermuda Triangle. That was one angle or aspect of interest to this production company. And the other ones I've done, about maybe 15 shows.
All on the Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah, it was quite a run on the Bermuda Triangles. First being, I think, National Geographic TV and Film, all the way through, there was some prior to that, too.
But they were looking for your theories on what might be at work in the Bermuda Triangle, correct?
Very much so, because there's a lot of things that I do seem to parallel the Bermuda Triangle in some of the evidence and materials that they have in the evidence areas, like tires full of strange pieces of other materials. When they analyze it and cut it apart, they find wood and paper and stuff in it. Aircraft tire? Okay, that's similar to my stuff. Also, the strange movements, disorientation effects of things, the moving of compasses by themselves. Well, that's kind of natural if you're doing magnetic engineering and focusing.
Right.
So there's a lot of aspects to the Bermuda Triangle. Like, you could say you get into the conventional scientists to say, oh, well, it's methane gas coming up and bubbling up and causing the ship to lose buoyancy and falling down in the ocean kind of thing. No, I don't think so. Because what about all the aircraft that have disappeared in that region?
Exactly.
So there's a strong correlation between the two.
With your work and what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a giant Tesla coil underneath the ocean. What could be causing this?
Well, okay, there's like working with RF and energies like that, RF and electrostatics, magnetics, actually can be produced naturally in a very famous, well-documented case in Booker Bay, Australia.
Oh, listen, let's take a time out. We'll talk about that when we come back. John Hutchison is my guest, inventor, Nikola Tesla authority, and discovery of the Hutchison effect. Back with more of the Richard Serrett Show here on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
This is not a psychotic episode. This is a cleansing moment of clarity.
Call 310-5533 for plumbing the way you know it should be.
Hi, I'm Roberto Luongo.
John Hutchison here, explaining some possible scenarios that might account for the effect known as the Bermuda Triangle. We've seen the disappearance of hundreds of ships and boats and aircraft of all sorts over the last 60, 70, 80 years or so. Now, one of your theories has to do with the fact that some of the effects that you've produced in your laboratory, the Hutchison effect, may actually be produced naturally in somewhere within the Bermuda Triangle. So explain that, John.
I sure will. There was some of these effects appear to mimic the effects I produce here. And the natural effects, most pronounced in a very not well-publicized case, was Booker Bay, Australia, where it was covered by Channel 4, as well as top scientists Hal Pudoff, Paul Devereaux, and heavily covered by a lot of witnesses, where there were strange lights appearing on land. There was energy that seemed to be pushing people around, and metal would turn soft. Don't hear anything on the news about it, but I did have a report sent to me by Mr. Harrington in Australia, who lives in Booker Bay, who first brought that to my attention. Now, this is interesting because also at the South Pole, there were some scientists that did measurements in time. And to their surprise, they found their instruments all turned backwards about 30 years in time when they put them up in a balloon up into the sky into this gray, strange cloud. And when they brought the balloon back down, 30 years back in time. They tried the experiment again and again, and it seemed to be quite...
A naturally occurring time machine?
Yep, absolutely. It made it. I have actually all the documents on that with the scientists' names, and apparently what happened, this is in 2004, it made so much interest generated so much interest in the scientific community in that it made it to the White House. But also, going back to Booker Bay, was 1995 when all these measurements were taken. Absolutely fascinating stuff, because I had the report in my hand. They did magnetic measurements with a magnometer, as well as a lot of photographs and measurements and witnesses.
Are you saying that these planes in the Bermuda Triangle may have flown into some similar cloud?
That's a good point. Maybe they did. You know, we never thought of that. I mean, I was talking with the Fox producers. We never made that connection until you just mentioned that.
Well, what would have been in that cloud that would account for that effect?
Sort of a metallic kind of cloud. That's what is reported in a lot of the cases. So let's say you have the South Pole, where it was definitely proven to seem to be time reversal. But what happened if that was the same in the Bermuda Triangle? Very interesting connection. Never really thought of it until you mentioned it.
Any idea what that, what could account for a cloud like that? What would be in the cloud that would produce that effect? You mentioned a miniature black hole. Is that what we're talking about?
That is one of the topics that's been a hot commodity in the scientific community, is little miniature black holes. And they do distort time and space and gravity.
My word.
On the subatomic level.
All right, John, what's coming up next in your adventure?
It's always ongoing. It's so widespread. Well, the main thing is working with the TV people, Fox Television, Robert Drake, or if not, Griffin Productions, doing a lot of work and production and getting this stuff out into the media, as well as other adventures ongoing. My lady there being, a lease thing going on there. Some kind of strange stuff going on there. Otherwise, there's some people writing books about yours truly. It's just an ongoing adventure. It just never stops.
John, you're madly off in all directions. I wish I could.
Yeah.
We need to get you focused on coming up with a super car battery. We can put in an electric car, and our energy worries will be gone.
I need an agent, really. I got so many fans. You know, I get hundreds and hundreds of emails per day, and they're fans and kids and people, and I feel obligated, you know, of course, to answer them. And some I make very close friends too, so. I need some kind of help.
All right.
Not psychiatric.
No, I wasn't going to say anything, John.
Okay.
Well, I'm one of your fans, and I hope I look forward to your next visit on the program.
I look forward to it, too.
All right. John Hutchison, and it's HutchisonEffect.ca and also AmericanAntiGravity.com. Until next time, John, thank you.
You're very welcome, sir, and you have a great evening there.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.